Coming up on Smart Tech Today, Matthew Casinelli and I lament the Sonos mess. That's right. Who knows what the future of Sonos looks like now that they've kind of upset their most loving customers. Plus, we talk about how could we not talk about IKEA's blinds. They're working with HomeKit. Plus, some conversation about Eero getting HomeKit support. That should be interesting. And health. Apple and Microsoft coming together to give us better access to our health information. All that and so much more up next. Stay tuned. Smart Tech Today is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This episode of Smart Tech Today is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online privacy with one click. Yes, it's that easy. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/STT. Welcome back to Smart Tech Today. Unless it's your first time listening, then welcome to your first episode, but not the first episode of Smart Tech Today. I am Micah Sargent, and today apparently I'm not telling you about how we explain the exciting, dynamic, and sometimes confusing subject that is the Internet of Things and everything in between. I am excited to be joined by Matthew Casinelli. Hello, Matthew.
Hello. I am super excited to have invested in a Sonos system for my old speakers recently.
Your old Sonos speakers?
Yeah, no, my old Sonos speakers.
I heard a thing about old Sonos speakers.
Oh, that's some fun news that we'll cover soon, but not yet.
Yes.
We have some other topics first.
We will get to that, and what a brutal revelation you've come to. I wanted to start with something a little different. But incredibly fun, in my opinion. This was a thing, it was announced quite a while ago, I believe back in June of 2017. Ah, oh, the summer of 2017. Uh-huh. It was warm and it was humid. Anyway, the San Francisco, I guess so then it wasn't humid, it was like about to rain. The San Francisco Museum of Modern Art put out this really cool little project where you can send a text message to 57251, and you say to this AI, this little bot, you say, send me blank, and then you fill in the blank with whatever you want to have sent to you. So the first thing that I did, and it's not just text, you can also send emoji. So the first thing I did was send me and then a dog emoji, and it sent me a photo with a dog in it. And then I did send me and the egg emoji, and there was not a return for that. However, when I said send me eggs, it did return something. And send me something green also worked. My mom actually shared this with me. She texted me this screenshot of somebody talking about it, and she was like, it really works too. So I tried it out and it worked. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of neat. So
they send you back artwork based off of the keyword that you send to them?
Precisely. And they will tell you, you know, the as much information about the piece as they can. So for example, when I said, send me panda, Dustin Shum's Shenzhen from 2006 was sent to me. So I'm going to try and find that and share that with Kevin so he can show you all Dustin Shum's Shenzhen from 2006. And there was one that had a panda in it. Okay, I've included that in the show notes now, Kevin. That's not the image, so never mind. I don't know. Maybe he has more somewhere.
Maybe he just needs to text
It is. I found it. this is the one that has pandas in it. So, Kevin, the second link that I've included in there is the one that has the panda under notes. So for folks who are watching, thank you for tuning in, either live or being a subscriber to the show. And yeah, that's the pandas that it sent me. Those aren't real pandas. Those are little, I think they're like go-karts with panda heads on them. It's a little unsettling, to be honest. But yeah, 57251 doesn't cost you anything. They'll send you the, well, carrier rates apply, obviously, but they don't charge you anything extra. It's not a a premium service or anything like that.
Nice. Pretty cool. Just a little like serendipity, maybe? Is that the right? Yeah. Just, I mean, not exactly because you're asking for something, but even still, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's a neat little tech service.
So you can check out some art from SF MoMA there at 57251. And if you already heard about it, that's awesome. You are ahead of your times, and I'm glad. all right. So now that we've got the texting out of the way, let's move on. This had me pumped. And Matthew, you and I have talked a lot about how every time in the past, we've been like, oh, yeah, you know, it'd be super cool as if your blinds could automatically rise and lower with your smart home. And unfortunately, the way to do that for the longest time has been to spend a crud ton of money. There were only
$900 or more. Yeah.
Yeah. There were only a few brands out there. I think one time for the lulz, for the jokes, I did a, what's the word I'm looking for? A quote on how much it would cost me to outfit my home with, HomeKit enabled blinds. And it was upwards of $6,000. Which is just ridiculous and is not something I'm going to do. So
it's one of those things where if you have to ask, you can't afford it.
Yes, yes, yes. And they kind of, whenever I did the quote, they're like, you're doing a quote, you fool. Just give us all your money. And so now they, we've been kind of pumped about IKEA coming out with the blinds that will work with HomeKit. And these are called the Fjertur blinds, F-Y-R-T-U-R.
And Fjertur.
It's the future of blinds. And so someone posted on Reddit the HomeKit blinds in action. They've got their whole, I think it's their sunroom or like porch area, and there are 12 of these blinds all working in concert. And they say, hey, boo-boo, take up the shades or something like that. And then suddenly, they're off to the races. I want this so bad. What about you?
It's pretty, it's an awesome little demo video just because it's 12 at a time. I think one is slightly out of sync than the others.
Yes.
So it's going faster than the others. And it's like, oh, dang it. But it still is cool. I did notice that they're decently loud. Like the, I got to remember, it's IKEA, right?
IKEA, you know.
That they're, it's just like, if you did that for sunrise, I'm pretty sure it would wake you up. So I don't know how feasible it is for like a, the shades rise as like they do in every commercial and everything like that. But
of course, I suppose if you have them all, oh my goodness, my dogs would bark at them.
Yeah, the dog in the video. The first comment in Reddit is like, the dog is like, what is going on?
It just reminds me of Flight of the Bumblebees.
Yeah, a little buzzing. So, yeah. And I don't know. It still seems interesting, though. Like,
apparently, Scooter X in the chat posted an article about the blinds, kind of these new ones getting hit by technical issues. HomeKit finally started. However, it appears that the problems continue when, when one British owner asked IKEA why HomeKit support had not been added in the UK, the company said this was due to technical issues with the US rollout. Due to some technical issues with the latest update that was launched in the USA, we've had to delay rolling this update out within the EU until these issues have been fixed. We currently do not have a date for this, but our team is working on this. That was on January 15th, and I don't know if this person has had any issues. The video that we posted was posted 7 days. I hate
relative dates in Reddit.
Yes, like, I don't. How? What was 7 days ago? I don't do math. No, it was the 20th, and so that was. Where was that other link? I lost it. There it is. Yeah, so that was as of January 15th. So the 20th, their blinds were working just fine. Of course, yeah. I could have posted the video later, so who knows for sure. So I'm just going to keep my eye on things, I guess, is how I feel about it. And we'll see if this is something that I, you know, end up dipping my toe into.
Come down and make a trip of it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We still have to do that. We go to IKEA. Yeah, so that's the blinds, and we'll see about that. So next is, I still don't know how this name is pronounced, but I'm going to go with Malouf. That is M-A-L-O-U-F, Malouf. And this is another smart bed that works with Siri. So the idea here is that you can adjust your bed however you like it using the app or using Siri.
It's actually Siri shortcuts. Oh, excuse is the trick. Me. Sorry. And that's of course why I put it in there.
See, I should have known.
Yeah. Because it's the article does, it's by Christopher Close, who actually, he works for iMore, but he does his own website, HomeKit Hero, now too, which is recommended. I've been getting some good articles for this podcast from there, actually. But he's basically been covering like the wave of apps and services that work with Siri shortcuts, but not like Siri proper or HomeKit itself. And I tried to find some of these at CES, but of course, like, I don't know. I think people are either like waiting for HomeKit or chose to like maybe adopt this. But this company actually contacted me, and I was kind of like, I don't totally want to put a whole adjustable bed in my house right now just to test this. But it does seem really interesting. Like, you can basically set up all your shortcuts and have it be part of like a routine so that it like reclines the back up for you and sticks the legs up, almost like a fancy like hospital bed type of thing. But I actually, like, I've never even thought about really using something like this. Like, have you ever considered a bed like this?
No.
One of those like adjustables?
No.
Or?
So I don't know enough about the science of posture.
Yeah, exactly.
In sleep, outside of understanding what sleep scientists have determined is the best position to sleep, given that the bed is flat. It's my understanding, as we know right now, and I think the part of this, of course, is that we're not doing research on, specific research on sleep and bed shape and how those two interact. The extent of our sort of adjustable bed situation has to do with hospitals and people who are bedridden and having to, you know, handle it that way. And so what effect it has on the skin, what effect it has on your circulatory system and things like that. Less about sleep and more about those things. So given that we have so much data and research on a flat bed and the best way to get sleep on a flat bed, yeah. I have no interest in adding another wrinkle to, I don't want to add a pee to my bed.
Yeah, you feel it. I mean, you could just like watch The Office in bed like this.
But
and
I can
then
do that
switch.
Anyway.
But then you have to like prop up pillows or you're like at a weird angle or something.
Well, and it's also the recommendation of sleep scientists that one only does, I think it's two things in bed. One has sexual intercourse in bed and one sleeps in bed. One does not do anything else.
Even just for like your brain.
Yeah,
to, like,
because your brain will associate
rhythm.
Exactly. Your brain starts to associate this spot with any other thing. And so if Scott's Tots comes on while I'm in bed, I'll never sleep again. And so, yeah, I just...
Hey, Mr. Scott, what you gonna
do? Oh, no, please stop. No, I'll have to go. I'll have to get out of here. And so I think that is, you know, it's like it's an experiment where you have too many variables and you have to cut those down to one variable. I don't need to add another variable to something that I'm already working on trying to perfect to the best of my ability. So, yeah, that's kind of my feels about having an adjustable bed. But some people... like having an adjustable bed. Some people, like I said, you need an adjustable bed for other reasons than just sleep. If you know you have sort of back pains, or if you have a circulatory system that doesn't work in the ideal way, or whatever, then having the ability to raise your feet or do whatever it is that you need to do, I think is great. And if it's app enabled and there's, you know, not a control to fidget with, that's cool. And even less, like just using your voice would be great. So, yeah.
Yeah, it does seem, got to get a whole day bed situation. That's what I was thinking. It's like, just use this for reclining.
But. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, basically, it's a big lazy boy at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Who needs a recliner when you've got a Maloof?
Yeah, exactly. Like leather chairs or whatever. Also, that totally reminds me. I think you were saying that you should sleep on your left, and that like helps with the way you sleep and stuff like that, mm-hmm. on your left side. And that, I think that was last 2 weeks ago when we last did our most recent episode, and it has totally worked. You are absolutely right. It's wild. Like I totally, like, I don't want to say I like had upset stomach or something in the morning, but like I definitely noticed that it wasn't as great. And then I like switched to the other side, mm-hmm. and it's like I've like slept a little bit better and stuff like that. So that's thank you wonderful. For that, Dr. Micah.
Oh, anytime. Yeah, not a doctor.
I'll cite you as the official medical resource.
Yeah,
legally.
So if we've got, you know, new people tuning in this week, oh my God, stop. I'll have my lawyers talk to your lawyers, so we'll get that solved. But if you're tuning in for the first time this week, or you didn't get to catch last week's episode, what are you doing? Go listen. No. essentially, so a lot of our body, in most cases, it's parallel. You've got two lungs, you got two arms, you got two legs, but internally, some of our organs are, of course, not exactly parallel, left and right. And so your stomach, of course, your heart is one, your stomach is another. And so the way that it lays in most bodies, is such that if you lay on your left side, it puts the stomach in its natural position. Whereas if you lay on your right side, it sort of makes it flop a different way, which can cause gastric juices to go up through your esophagus. So essentially, it doesn't help anyone who has any kind of GERD or something like that. It is only, you are helping yourself and helping keep yourself from having acid reflux and things like that by sleeping on your left side because, well, again, assuming that you are anatomically, statistically typical, I guess is the best way to put that, where your stomach is benefited by being on the left side. And I love it. Yes, we're laying on our left sides now.
Turning the video feed.
And if you lay on your back, that can still cause some stomach upset and sort of gastric moving up through. And if you lay on your stomach, that's just all kinds of bad. If you're laying on your stomach, by the way, for the folks listening who have no idea why I'm laughing right now, it's because the technical director, Kevin, is currently, I don't know, XYZ like accessing the video so that we're laying on the different sides. and so that actually just will cause problems with your spine. If you're going to lay on your stomach, you really need to be laying without a pillow completely. Yeah. If you're on your back, you need to be laying with a pretty flat pillow. And if you're on your side, then you need a really well-supporting pillow.
So, yeah. Well, I feel like the biggest problem is that I'm breathing like in my girlfriend's face now. I think that's why I didn't do it as much.
So she lays on her right side?
Well, just in general, I think I tended to lay that way just so that I wouldn't end up doing that and never thought about like one way or the other. So we'll see. Yeah. Oh, this is the worst podcast ever.
Yes, it is. This is the sleep podcast too. Left side, everybody. Just if everybody's doing it, then nobody's breathing in anyone's face. We're breathing in each other's hair.
That concludes Micah's health corner.
Thank God. so I saw this, you saw this, didn't you? This was you.
Yeah.
So you sent this to me. I saw the IKEA one on Reddit via Twitter. You saw this one. Apparently Eero is about to have. So let's kick things back a little bit. Apple's HomeKit platform Two things were announced at the last Worldwide Developers Conference. One of those things was that Apple was going to be offering something called HomeKit Secure Video. What HomeKit Secure Video would do is allow you to essentially locally process video that does person detection, pet detection, and car detection, or sorry, vehicle detection, with the in-home devices that you have, and then gives you a place to store your videos that is completely encrypted and doesn't cost you anything extra. Given that you pay for a storage subscription, an iCloud storage subscription,
More than the base one, I think.
More than the base one.
Yeah.
But I'm not positive about that. If you do that, then you get unlimited storage for the videos that does not count against your storage. So it's kind of neat and weird. That was one of the things. The other thing that they announced was that they were going to be adding HomeKit support to certain routers. And what this would do is basically keep your HomeKit-enabled devices sort of in a pseudo-separate environment within your home Wi-Fi network. So right now, this is the problem. If I want to have a HomeKit home with a bunch of different devices, but I want them to exist on their own network, then I have to switch my device that I'm choosing to control those devices to that network if I want to appear as if I am in the home with them. So it just adds an extra bit of less control than is ideal. Mm-hmm. It's a good idea in some senses to sort of push your stuff to a separate network, and there are reasons to do that, and it just kind of adds some complications for simplicity's sake.
Yeah, so, definitely more complicated to balance half your network on a guest network or something like that.
Yeah.
But it is possible.
And then, that brings up, like I said, the issues of, well, now if I'm talking to Siri on my Apple TV, is it going to be able to control those devices if they're not on the home network, or is it going to try to route it through? All that stuff. It gets complicated. And so this basically does that while keeping those devices in HomeKit's eyes, kind of on the same server or on the same network. So it's great. It's a great thing because you get that firewalled protection essentially, but you don't have to worry about switching to another network to make it happen. Eero was one of the companies that said it was going to add support for this. And there were a few others, and it looks like Eero is getting near to adding support because someone was going through and setting up some stuff in their HomeKit or in their home app on iOS, and there is an option to add their living room Eero router to their HomeKit home.
Unfortunately, but it doesn't connect.
Yes. So you do need a setup code. That's how Apple's sort of system works. They have either a little setup code that has a little home next to it, and the your phone kind of zeroes in on the thing, or there's NFC built in. And so what I imagine Eero will do, I'm not sure if the Eero routers have NFC built into them. They might, but there is a way to generate a setup code on the software side rather than it being a hardware thing. Some companies just built in a HomeKit code before they knew they were going to offer support. The Logitech Circle camera, before it had HomeKit support, they printed the HomeKit code in this very tiny, tiny, tiny font on the inside of the mount that the mount connection points. And so it was like, oh, if you can't get the code to pop up in the app, here's where you find it. And so I'm digging in and got the magnifying glass out and see the little code. And it was kind of fun. So I'm curious if somewhere there's a HomeKit code on that Eero device. And if so,
just tear yours open and look inside.
Oh, maybe I'll do that. And then I will bill you if it does end up breaking.
I can send that to Eero. Forward that along for you.
Now, you've got Eero in your home, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about your complicated home Wi-Fi setup.
Oh, yeah. Because last time we had a couple of Wi-Fi stutters show. And so I basically was like, all right, I need to get Ethernet. And so, I mean, I also
need to
have
get Ethernet,
but I don't even know really if I'm doing it right, but it's, first of all, it seems to be working because this hasn't cut out at all. Although I'm pretty sure it happens at like 5 PM. So somebody must get home and start like pirating all their movies or whatever.
Right now you sound great. You look great. It's all great.
Oh, thanks.
You're so welcome. Perfect. Yeah. Look at you.
Oh, I just messed my hair up.
Flip it back.
But yeah, so I got Ethernet wired out the wall of my downstairs and then like around the side of the house above the door and then up into the second story into the room where my office currently is so that I could basically get a direct connection to this Mac that I have.
Okay.
But
and
it's all going...
Did you train a pet squirrel to do this?
No, I hired a professional so that I did not
You hired
hurt
a professional
myself
squirrel?
Because... yes, exactly.
Gotcha.
I actually used Thumbtack, which worked pretty well.
Okay.
Because,
don't know what that is, but I'm looking.
It's
it
like
up.
A. I'm pretty. It might only really be in Silicon Valley area or San Francisco stuff, but it's like hire local professionals type of thing. Although I'm pretty sure it's kind of like kind of professionals sort of situation.
Oh, gotcha. yeah, I can join as a pro. Let's see. I'm a professional.
I mean, honestly, you could set up people's CarPlay dashboards for them if you wanted.
You know, I could do some automotive electrical engineering.
And then go on to the hospital to do your healthcare.
Yes. Who needs some sleep science? Oh, man. Oh, this is an interesting site. Okay.
I am blessed to have Sonic internet, and I've gotten away from Comcast, which
can
means...
I just wish you'd stop bragging about it. I'm just getting sick of it.
But it basically means that I don't have like that monthly cap too, which is usually was the biggest problem for me because once I started doing video stuff and then even just like if I ever restored my iPad, that alone would take half the month of data. But so that is coming out of Sonic, like their fiber network, and then into
ridiculous.
A
ridiculous. I'm
router.
Sorry. I know you. That's horrible. The data cape. No, that data cap is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's bad. It's, they'll like charge you more if you go over a terabyte too, which is like, I think I was paying like four times as much as I am now. Yeah, not great. But now it is going into, I couldn't figure it out because it's originally it was just going into an Eero and then that was going upstairs to the other Eero and my Mac was plugged into that upstairs one to at least not just go like Wi-Fi. It was just like one jump.
Yeah,
but it was still, and I was still getting like 80 megabytes down, but it had intermittent issues was the biggest problem because it's basically like I have weird molding in this house. If you're watching the video, you can see it like around my door that's on every edge and stuff like that. So it's all like going around like four angles and up into this room.
Right.
So having it direct is already making a huge difference. But when I first did that, it was kind of being weird because I have an Ethernet switch so that I plug in the Sonic, or originally it would go into the Eero and then out into the Ethernet switch.
Right.
But that was like, I still don't know what I'm doing. So if anybody is actually an expert at this, please let me know. But I plugged it directly into the Ethernet switch and then that goes out to the Eero to just give a Wi-Fi network. But then everything else, then that Ethernet switch goes all the way upstairs like 150 feet into the upstairs Eero now. And then my iMac is plugged into that. So
yeah, see,
I might even get another switch up here just so that I can have everything else wired too.
Yeah. See, that's nice. And that's one of the things I think people need to sort of pay attention to. This was something that you pointed out to me is that, there was a Twitter thread about this. A lot of times you get these devices and they make a claim for how fast they're going to provide speeds. And it ends up being sort of an amalgamation of all of the different types of speeds that they offer. And so they just kind of get to add everything up. And so it reminds me of car salesmen in a way and car marketing, where the, you know, miles per gallon on the freeway versus in the city. And they're all just kind of like blah, blah, blah. And none of it is actually real at all. And that's what it feels like with routers and things like that. And so, you know, the thing is that it can make a difference depending, like you've said, on where you plug things in, what Wi-Fi switch or what network switch you have, and whether you're, you know, plugging into a gigabit switch or you're plugging into 1,000 megabits down, etc. So that does that. That can make a difference. And what I found fascinating, you know, we were kind of talking back and forth about this, and I've done a few home wiring networking projects before I moved to California, where they have super strict rules against adding anything to rental homes.
Yeah.
Don't get me started. But back then, you know, I'd done some wiring projects, and the way that I would have done it is kind of the opposite of how you do have it set up. And whenever you said you were getting better speeds, I was kind of like, that is incredible and very fascinating.
Yeah. So you were saying it should go into the Euro and then out to the switch.
Yeah, exactly. So the, you know, Sonic's sort of providing the internet to the Euro, and the Euro does the smarts of, choosing where to send the signal next, where it gets to be the, especially as a Wi-Fi base, you know, to have it be a secondary thing as a Wi-Fi base versus the primary thing, and then the network switch, that was the part that was a little, seemed backward to me. But the fact that you've, like I said, you've got these speeds going, it kind of makes sense to me now, given that most of the time in more professional setups, each individual Wi-Fi access point is just that. It's a Wi-Fi access point.
Yeah.
It's not as if the router, the main router itself, is also putting out Wi-Fi. It's usually just a switch that then has wireless access points along the way and also has some direct connections. So I think that what you're doing actually makes more sense if you're treating your Eero sort of as one of the access points along the way, and the switch kind of is serving as the main base.
Yeah, it's like, I can't tell if maybe it's just because it's like even faster that I just don't notice that the main Eero. I don't see why. I do think, though, it makes sense to me logically that like it's all wired in that way and not like passing through Eero systems. It's just the rest is just getting whatever
pure,
it needs.
Right. The pure connection.
Yeah, exactly. Which was, I don't even know. I'm making that up. So,
well, no. I mean, you're not. You're not making it up. It's that is what it is, because Eero does have its own special sauce that it throws on things. And especially if you have the Eero Pro subscription, which is going to do network connection tests and things like that. So there's every chance that can get slowed down. Let's move on to our next topic. Sure. But I do want to take a quick break, because ExpressVPN is sponsoring this week's episode of Smart Tech Today. Look, we all know, you know, you're a listener of this show, you know the smart tech, you know how to make sure your computer's safe in the environment, so you know how your VPN protects your privacy and your security online. But did you know that it can take your TV watching to the next level by unlocking movies and shows that are only available in other countries? I want to tell you about a friend of mine who watched the American version of a new trash TV show called The Circle. And he, my friend, fell in love with the show and really, really, really liked it. And so he, my friend, wanted to watch more of it. And it turns out that the UK's Channel 4 was the first to come up with the concept for The Circle and had a whole two series of like 14 to 16 episodes each to watch. And so my friend used ExpressVPN to change his location to, and you know, I'm just hearing this, you know, through text messages and stuff, that's what he's doing, used it to change his location to the UK Docklands, and then was able to watch the Channel 4 UK version of The Circle. And my friend really, really was excited about that. So you out there, like my friend, can use ExpressVPN to binge on Doctor Who or Star Trek on the UK Netflix. It's simple. All you do is you fire up the ExpressVPN app, you change your location, like my friend did, to the UK, you refresh Netflix, and that's it. It's ready for you. ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think you're located. So you can choose from almost 100 different countries. So just think about all the Netflix libraries you can go through. If you love anime, you can use ExpressVPN to access the Japanese Netflix. But it's not just Netflix. ExpressVPN works with any streaming service. There's Hulu, there's the BBC iPlayer, YouTube, you name it. There are hundreds of VPNs out there. But the reason I'm using ExpressVPN, or my friend is using ExpressVPN, is to watch shows. And that's because it's ridiculously fast. I didn't notice I mean, my friend didn't notice any difference between watching the shows using the San Francisco connection, my normal connection, versus using a connection from all the way in the UK Docklands. It was the same. It was ridiculously fast. There was never any buffering or lag outside of what's normal. And, of course, you can stream in HD with no problem. Or should I say HD, because it is a British show. ExpressVPN is also compatible with all your devices. And that is no lie, folks. They have compatibility for everything. They got a way to set it up with the router, at the router level, if you want to. So whether you're using phones or media consoles or smart TVs or whatever, you can watch what you want on the go on the big screen wherever you are. So check out ExpressVPN, and you too can watch trash TV like The Circle, which actually ends up being really, really good and is kind of touching and sweet and fun, or so says my friend. Now, if you visit the special link at expressvpn.com/STT, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free, an extra 3 months of binge-watching television all over the world. So you can support our show, you can watch what you want, and you can protect yourself by visiting expressvpn.com/STT. Thank you so much, ExpressVPN, for supporting me and my friends' binging habits. Oh, all right, Matthew Casanelli. I wanted to talk about this story because I found this really interesting and exciting that Apple and Microsoft are joining a meeting where they will be promoting patient access to health data. So this is something that the Department of Health and Human Services is putting together. It's an idea that patients should have better and easier access to their health data. I think anyone can agree that that's a good thing. And when we're seeing these big companies jump on board, Apple, Microsoft, especially, you know, Apple for the consumer side, but Microsoft, they are the backbone of a lot of hospitals and ERs and health services and all that kind of stuff. You see Windows machines all over in these environments. So to have these two companies, one from the consumer side and one from the sort of corporate side, come together right now over me is really wonderful and makes me pumped about the future of accessing my health data.
Yeah, this seems like an awesome story. I'm looking at the Apple employee who's supposedly going to be there, Ricky Blumenfeld, who's like a health scientist. It's pretty much what you were just saying as he was like his tagline of like giving people access to their data to improve their health, which is, seems logical to me because it's hard to keep track of. And
it is
like, honestly, probably, I mean, all of my personal health data is already on my iPhone, not the medical version, like from my doctors and stuff like that, because I've got tracking data for years and years now on here that can show insight into my behaviors, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm also glad that's private, I guess.
Yes, private, secure, locked away. I got an email not too terribly long after I talked about the health app on iOS, specifically the health records tracking. So with health records, you can go in and add your hospital or your doctor's office or what have you to the system, mm-hmm. and it will pull that information and provide it in a way that is understandable, that makes sense, that helps you, you know, see what you know, what's going on in your life. And so that information, all those different web portals and things like that are very difficult to access. And now some of them have apps, but all the apps are different. You move to a new place like I did and you got to learn a new app. You got to learn. No, I have my doctor's office from Missouri, my doctor's office from California, and then some other systems that I've used in the past, all plugged into my one health app. And that means that when I go to my doctor's office and they say, did you get the Tdap vaccine? And I go, is that, huh?
Yeah.
and then I can see, oh yes, on September 9th, I got my tetanus, diphtheria and pertussis, vaccine. And where it was done, it tells me right where it was done, the date it was done and all that kind of stuff. And then it also gives you more information as it tells me the person who actually gave me the shot, and includes information about other names for like what the Tdap vaccine is called. So there's loads of information in here that you can see everything that you want to know. And having access to that data is what's so important, because take control, and sort of by having the full scope of your information, you're not only helping yourself, you're not only helping yourself make good decisions for yourself, but you're also helping your doctor. You know, a lot of times these doctors, unfortunately, are hit with so many patients per day. In fact, and this is another a little bit of an aside, but a lot of times family doctors in particular, they are scheduled for 30 minutes with each patient, because there are so many patients and not enough doctors. So they're scheduled with 30 minutes for each patient. And the hope is that, you know, of course you're going to have some, they're going to go for longer than 30 minutes, but then you hope that you'll have some that'll go less than 30 minutes. And if the first person of the day shows up late, the doctor, the rest of their schedule is thrown off no matter what throughout the day. And so that's why, A, you should always be patient when you go to your doctor and you're waiting for your doctor to arrive. It's literally because they have to go from patient to patient to patient. And in many cases, they don't really get a break to even use the restroom for a long time. It's kind of, it's wild. So all that said, you know, to have all of that information readily accessible in their brain or in the one chart, if they don't have all of your information pulled in, if it was a incompatible system with whoever your doctor was before, all that stuff can kind of make a difference. And then when you're getting prepared to go to your next appointment or what have you, to have that information and go, okay, I see that overall my heart, my blood pressure seems to be going back down to a normal level. So how do I continue to, you know, keep that on track or whatever the question might be. So yeah, this is of course something that will continue to prove as the smart devices that we have, our wearables in particular, continue to help us take control of our health and keep an eye on our sleep and our heart, you know, our cardiovascular health and all those kinds of things. So it's all very exciting to me.
I'm looking forward to see what comes out of that meeting.
Me too.
That is some big names.
Exactly. Yeah.
Trying to make their presence known. Yeah.
All in one room, for sure. Yeah. So tell me about the new Nest Hub Media View.
Yeah. This is just a quick little thing that I saw pop up for people who have the Home Hub or Nest Hub, as it's now called, but it's just a way to like quickly access your now playing stuff and then also start music on another speaker or something like that, which seems pretty convenient because sometimes it is just like you couldn't really do this from the screen itself, but now you can kind of access and see what's currently playing in which room and stuff like that, or play across all of them at once. And that's actually something I've been feeling with my HomePods and now my new Sonos that I got, is it does take like a bit. You either have to use your voice to say like play in this room and this room and this room. Because if I say play everywhere, it will like turn on the Apple TVs also. And then I've just noticed it's like a little bit hard right now to play to all of my speakers. And you can in Control Center. I'm probably mostly referring to the fact that Shortcuts can't send it to multiple speakers at once. And I want to just have a button to press like this. So but if you are on a Nest Hub, which I've now got sitting in my office right over here next to me, trying to point at it with my thumb, that will be like my little test device to have for Google stuff in this room now, which is great.
Nice. Nice. Next story. I thought this was another one worth talking about. Moen.
Yeah. Just read the headline.
Okay. I'll just read the headline. This is from Cult of Mac. Now you can shower like Tim Cook without getting soaked.
Yeah. You put this in the document and I was like, what?
So Nebbia is a company that is owned by Moen that makes a special shower head. As the story goes, Tim Cook was at a gym, which is not a surprise. Have you seen his guns? And by guns, I mean arms. Let's be clear. He was at a gym, and the shower at the gym had these showers that were that had the Nebbia shower head. So Nebbia is a play on the word nebulize, nebulizer. Essentially, it sends out tiny, tiny, tiny little droplets of water as opposed to a standard shower, which sends out, you know, streams of water. And so it mists you instead of spraying you. It's a mist instead of a spray. And so Tim Cook saw this. He saw that it was using less water and things like that, and a good mix of sustainability and design and whatnot. But now there's a new Nebbia shower head. It's version 2 that is being kickstarted and has made loads more money than it actually was sort of being kickstarted for. And
so it already made it. Nice.
Yes, definitely. So it provides you a full-on shower experience without using as much water. They show some different charts and things like that on the Kickstarter, including how it allegedly provides better shower allegedly provides better shower coverage, 2 times greater coverage than standard showers. Because
it looks like it's got like a little ring with 5 little spouts where it sprays those little beads of water down, as opposed to like the one pointed shower head going at you. I believe it. It looks like science.
Yeah, I see science here. Up to 45% water savings by using the Nebbia by Moen. I think this is fascinating.
It's $200 instead of $500.
Yeah, so it started out
they
pretty
got their pricing pricey. In line, it seems like.
Absolutely. Moen has done a lot of smart home stuff in the past, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Nebbia by Moen smart shower. And, you know, this might be something that when it is no longer a
That's fair.
Kickstarter project, I would give it a go. I would try something like this just to see.
It got 8 times its funding, so I think it...
Once it's available to purchase, and it comes with a shower wand too, so I can wash my dogs with it as well, which is nice. So we'll see. But apparently, you're saving a lot of water, and you get better coverage than you normally do, and it's endlessly adjustable.
That does seem awesome. Like, I love when you go to a different place, like when I was at CES, and then it's just got like a good shower head, and you're like, oh yeah, like this one is like, what's wrong with mine at home? I don't even know. But I thought this was going to be a reference at first to the article about Tim Cook, or like Tim Cook said with the original Apple Watch that he wears it in the shower.
And
I've worn every Apple Watch since then in the shower, like every single day since I've owned it, and I'm pretty sure they've been fine. I think for a while I had to like blow the water out of the speaker because it was like in there, and I would ask Siri something and it would be like but I don't think that happens on the Series 5, which is nice.
And now it does it on its own,
so you have to turn on water mode.
Yes.
And so I don't actually do that, so maybe I should have been this whole time.
Well,
because you can't use it, so like the point was to like I basically add things to Siri while I'm in the shower because I like that's when I think of all of my best ideas. So,
well, and what you can do is you just turn it on quickly afterward and then run the ring, and then it'll do that.
It like shoots the water out using the speakers, which is cool.
Yeah, I dig it. So that's that. Let's see what's next on the list. We've got. Oh, I love this. So I like Pentagram. Pentagram is a design company that has made some very, very, very cool stuff in the past. Cool logos, Pentagram's super, super cool. And they have created a smart speaker that's a little bit like, do you remember back in the day, they looked like, like a little piece of toast, and you could slide tiny little electronic toasts into them, and the toasts had like a song on it, and so then you could play
kind
music.
Of, yeah.
And so it'd have like one song. So I remember having one. I can't remember what these things were called, but you could clip them on. They came with headphones built in, and then you would buy tracks at the store that you could put inside, and it was just this little thing. And I remember I had "Who Let the Dogs Out" by the Baha Men. was one of my little
very
tracks.
Of the era.
Very of the era. And so Pentagram has sort of made a modern version of this. It's called the Yodo Player, and it uses NFC physical cards to play audio. So apparently it was inspired by Montessori teachings. You want to give kids a certain level of independence and provide tactile learning. Hit clips. Let's see if that's what I'm talking about. I will look that up now. Yes, hit clips. Yeah. That's it.
The article references.
Oh, bless.
Nice.
Yes. Oh, that's my amazing. Goodness. Wow. Yeah. That is a throwback. Man, I just need a break here for a second. yeah, so hit clips. But anyway, the new smart speaker, and thank you, Bleak. For that. Yeah, so the new smart speaker is here, and it's made by Pentagram. Very interesting.
Neat.
Yeah. So you just, you know, you can drop some little cards in there and hear stories or hear music or what have you. And is kind of like, you know, you have a full-on smart speaker, and Paula wants a smart speaker, and so you get Paula this for her birthday or something.
Did I ever tell you about my NFC cards?
No, I know you used to stick NFC things all over your place, but not only you tell me about the cards. What's going on?
So I bought like 40 tags, and those are all under a bunch of services. But when I first did that research, you can buy, they're relatively like thick, so it's not exactly great for a wallet, but they're like playing cards that are just completely blank, and they have an NFC tag in them. And my whole, I basically wanted to do this. I have one that plays the Upgrade podcast from Relay FM. I have one of their stickers, and so I put the sticker on it, and then I wanted to like have a little like podcast collection where I take the card and tap it to my phone, then it starts playing on my HomePod and stuff like that. So
that's
those are
fun.
Pretty fun. I feel like it's just the whole like printing onto it and making it neat and stuff like that is like, this is a much better experience than something like that. And I'd have to set up all of the sound files and all that, but it is like, you can kind of have a DIY version, which is cool.
Yeah. Wait, so you're going to get a card printer?
I mean, expensive. Just figuring out how to print on them. I actually did see at CES, one of the products was like a wand that you could just like print with, and it would like put a little message to somebody printed on the back of an envelope. And I totally want one to like make NFC.
Cool.
It was for the NFC tag was what I was thinking, but the card too would be. And it is like, I mean, we should like get NFC cards branded with Smart Tech Today on them and stuff like that, and distribute them to people like with the purple background and all that or something. Cause
yes.
Then it is like, and or at least for maybe not the cards, but just if you make like podcast stickers, I do think people should put NFC tags in those now, because
that's
then
so
people
fun.
Can just like play your stuff.
I'm gonna have to experiment with that for sure. Yeah, that could be fun.
Yeah, I've been getting my NFC game up a little bit, because I made an initial video about it. I can put it in the show notes and everything. But one of the things that I wanted to really learn was like, what's actually useful, not just something that's like cool and I set it up. Like I've actually forgotten like 10 NFC tags that I have around the house, and all I like open my front door and there's like one there and I didn't know it was there. So I set that up now so that when I come home from a walk, I tag it and my AirPods turn on noise control, so I can't hear anything outside.
Maybe you could surgically embed one in the tip of your tongue.
You can do it in your fingertip. People definitely have NFC tags.
Lick your iPhone. And then
exactly.
it will call your dentist. I don't know.
See, this is why I need you for the ideas.
You're
They're
right.
So great.
I come up with these great ideas for NFC, like NFC tongue chips. They've got that crunchy cheddar flavor. Let's talk about Sonos now. We said we were going to talk about Sonos, and now it's time. You had a bunch of old Sonos speakers and you're mad. Why?
I mean, so I have managed to inherit Sonos speakers. So thankfully I didn't spend like $800 on this setup. But when various offices that I worked at ended up closing or like moving out, they were just like, we have these old Sonoses that we don't need anymore. And like, I got one, I think it's a Play 3, and then from an older office, a Play 5, which is like, I think 15 years old at this point. But basically the story is that Sonos is now discontinuing the like app updates that will support these speakers. And this is, I mean, it's been a whole saga because I think first, I don't remember the exact order that they came out, but that was part of it, that they were like, oh, these aren't going to work. And then there was another news story. I think we mentioned it on the first CES episode, but it was basically like, when you put them into recycle mode, they are permanently bricked. And also, these are like perfectly functioning speakers. And Sonos is like, we'll give you 30% off on new ones, but you have to put it in recycle mode. And then it was somebody who works at like the recycling plant is like, these are thousands of speakers that are perfectly fine and are now no longer functional for no reason, basically. And then even like Sonos was like, oh, if you bought a new speaker to work with your old system, which is specifically what I did, they're like, that speaker also won't get updates. And I think then basically there was like a week of blowback because people were like, oh, great, just this whole like $2,000 speaker system that I invested in now will no longer work. And they're even saying a little bit like, screw you to the people like me who bought a new one just to hook up with the old speakers. But then basically since then, they've like walked it back a little bit because they were like, oh my God, we pissed off everybody.
Yeah, they really did.
I think at least now your new speaker will get updates and they'll continue to like fix bugs as they can. But I think they're basically like, if Spotify changes their API in 5 years, your 20-year-old speaker at that point won't get updates. And there's a certain level of like, I get it. But also I think just Sonos as a brand has been like, buy this speaker system and you'll be good sort of thing. It's like, it seemed like at least my perception of it until a couple of years ago, at least, was always like, this is like the ultimate goal of like, you can always get these speakers. They'll all work together and it's all wireless multi-room stuff. And then I bought a Sonos one over Black Friday because it was on sale. I can guess why. but then it was, I mean, I get it too. Like the whole experience was fairly crummy where I could AirPlay to the new Sonos one, which could be paired in the Sonos app with the other rooms, but I couldn't control that pairing at all using a smart assistant or anything like that. And so we actually ended up unplugging one of the speakers and swapping them out. And now we just have like the Sonos one is in the kitchen and then the old Play 5 is in the other room. And I'm basically only going to use that like for parties or something like that. So I like, it's one of those things where I both understand what's happening with Sonos. They did a terrible job of communicating it. It was definitely the main part because they were just like, they sent out an email. Like I got this email that was like, just so you know, most of your speakers aren't going to work anymore and we're not going to update them. And it's like, what the hell? Like, what's going on? Like, why? And especially when they just recently had come out with the stuff that connects with the older ones. I like just now, I don't want to say like saved up for it because I bought it because it was on sale, but it was like, I was like building up the time, the right time to buy this speaker for this setup. And they're like, just kidding. You're screwed now.
Yeah. And it just seems to me, so if we look at it from like the business perspective, Sonos, in the same way that sometimes companies can hurt themselves by, in some ways, they can hurt themselves by making a product that lasts a very long time and works very well over the course of that time and don't provide updates that are worth it enough to upgrade. And I feel, this feels to me like Sonos is really, you know, they're kind of like, oh, crud, we need those people who love Sonos to buy new Sonos because we know those are our customers. But our customers are sticking with their legacy systems. So how do we go about doing this? And unfortunately, what they've done by doing the thing that they did was lose trust and goodwill from a lot of the people who would eventually, or who are currently the Sonos customers.
Yeah,
and so instead of, instead of doing a thing that was going to help them in the long run, they've certainly shot themselves in the foot a little bit here.
Yeah.
It's all
they
bad.
Like burn their best customers.
Yeah,
who,
exactly.
Anyone who invested in like the super large system is now screwed and would have to continue to spend thousands more dollars with this company who just kind of like said it. Also, they were like, by the way, you have to do this. And it just, I think combined with the sustainability thing that they've been pushing for like the last year, and then, oh, all those speakers that you got, it's not like we're going to give them away to people and let them know that it won't have like these smart updates, but it's still a functioning system. Like, it still sounds great. That's why it's absurd that like the recycle or your trade-in mode just destroys the speaker, and it just like hits all the wrong notes for exactly what they were trying to, like you said, they were trying to win over their long-term customers and probably just burned a lot of them. That's one of those things. I mean, I remember studying like luxury branding in marketing and stuff like that in business school. Mm-hmm. And I remember like completely being shocked that Sonos did a 2-for-1 for the Sonos One when it came out, and they started doing like all these deals. And on, to be fair, actually, like Apple has been doing deals on iPhones, and it's definitely, that's why it was so shocking to people, is because when in luxury branding, you just don't do that. Like, your customer base doesn't respond to like price drops and things like that. And it actually makes people like more turned off by the product. And I think like Sonos, again, doesn't know who their audience is, or they're trying to get two different ones.
That's what it is. Yeah.
They won over people like, not that my family has this, but my dad has speakers in our house that are 45 years old. And I kind of thought that's what a Sonos system would be like, but it turns out it's not, which
makes
sense in hindsight. But yeah, it is just like,
it reminds me of my choosing to invest in a really good set of stainless steel cookware and getting a cast iron skillet and knowing that those are going to be around for a very long time because I spent the money. And luckily, it's not connected to the internet or anything like that. So no one can tell me that I can't keep it updated, because as long as I take care of it, it will be updated by never being updated, by golly.
Yeah. Well, let's see with the HomePod. That's my situation. And I did get it thinking that it would last me 10 years or more.
Really?
So I'm hoping. I mean,
interesting.
It sounds good enough for what I need. And then the rest can be done with software. And so
I
figure Apple will be around
hardware.
In 10 years. So
yeah, that's a good point.
That was always my, like, I assume this will be updated. And that was why I bought it so quickly originally too, was because I was like, I'm just going to use it every day until it does get updated and still enjoy the music part.
Look at all those tweeters. I tell you, more tweeters than a bird sanctuary.
But I do appreciate having the, so now I can AirPlay to the Sonos One. And I was looking at all of my, like automation opportunities too, because it doesn't show up as an AirPlay capable automation speaker the way HomePods can, which is a shame, but I'm pretty sure there's ways to do it with Amazon's Lady or Mr. Google Assistant, gender neutral Google Assistant. But yeah. It's definitely, I was going to say, you had this great article.
No. We're going to talk about that next week. We don't have time.
Okay, cool. Save it for them.
Yeah, Jean-Louis Gasset has a great article that we will talk about next time about how he sees a lot of trouble with the Internet of Things. So we'll talk about Jean-Louis next time. But I do want to reach out and say, folks, we provide these shows to the world free of charge. We are a sponsor, an advertiser-supported network, and we love that we get to provide these shows to you for free. And I have to say, super thankful every time I hear about somebody. I've gotten a few tweets and a few emails about, I checked out the aftershocks, or, oh, I also sleep on a Casper mattress, or, oh, my dog loves that Casper pet bed. And we appreciate you, you know, using our codes to let those sponsors know that that we are, you know, sending you their way. But there is one way that you can help us out in a different way, and that is by filling out TWiT's annual audience survey. It only is going to take you about 5 minutes. We've taken some questions out, so it won't take you as long as it may have in the past. All you have to do is head to twit.to/survey20. That's a very important part, survey20. And let us know what you think. There's no sign-up form. We're not going to track you. Your feedback, of course, just helps us make TWiT even better. So by doing that, we can kind of get an idea of who you are and sort of in general what the audience is out there. And yeah, we appreciate that. And thank you for your continued support. So once again, that's twit.to/survey20. All righty, Matthew, it's time for our picks of the week.
Oh, yes. What is Yubico?
Yes.
The YubiKey, YubiKo?
YubiKo, YubiKey. IBKey, YubiKo. There we go. The YubiKo is a company that makes little keys, little security keys that provide a, you know, a certain factor of authentication. It depends on which factor you're using, but the YubiKey supports all of the modern types of authentication. So that's what FIDO is, a FIDO compliant device. It has what all is it? See, it's NFC, it's USB, of course, and it supports FIDO 2, FIDO UTF, YubiKo OTP, OAuth, TOTP, OAuth, HOTP, Smart Card, OpenPGP, and challenge response capabilities so that you can have hardware-based authentication with the YubiKey 5 series. Look, Leo is always bragging about, he's flashing around his YubiKey on all these shows we do together, and I'm jealous, so I decided to hop on board the YubiKey train, and I've started adding this little pal of mine to my different systems. Always, if you're going to get one, you need to get two. You need to have a backup key in case the first one is destroyed or lost or something like that. Leo recommends putting your second key in like a safety deposit box. I suggested on the collar around your dog's on your dog's collar. Not really a great place to put it. The other option is much better. But this allows me to provide multi-factor authentication, authentication to different accounts and services and things like that that I have. So I've set it up with my Dropbox. I've set it up with my Mac itself. The cool thing is that YubiKo has tutorials that walk you through setting up security key authentication for all different types of services. I made my Google account I think it's called Advanced Protection is the name of it, and it's for journalists and things like that. And so it adds a layer of extra security to your Gmail account, yes, and requires that you have a security key. And yeah, you can use it for all sorts of things. So I did have to break into the terminal a little bit, which was fun for me. I was like, oh yeah, now we're really doing it, in order to get it set up with my Mac. And then it's NFC, so I can tap on it with my iPhone, and it sends me to a page where I get an OTP that I can then copy to the clipboard or validate that it is actually, you know, a real key that is with the system. And then within the app, so YubiKo has an app called Authenticator, and I just tap to NFC with my card, and then it has saved all of my one-time password systems that I have. Nice. Across different services. So there's
that's NFC on your iPhone, you said?
Yeah, NFC on the iPhone, and then USB, which is unfortunate because I do have a USB-C Mac, and so I have to have the little dongle. They do make a USB-C YubiKey 5, but it does not have NFC. So you can't get both in the same package.
See there's a 5CI that has USB-C and Lightning.
Yes. Yeah. Which if you're a mostly iOS, iPad OS kind of person, that's a great device. The only thing is it's
unavailable.
And it costs a lot more money because of Apple's made for iPhone program licensing. So that extra cost that's in there for the licensing is kind of a bummer. So I'm happy with the NFC because it'll work on my iOS devices. And then even though I can't directly connect to my MacBook Pro, I always have that USB dongle with me in the event that I need to use it. Like I don't type in a password or something like that. So yeah, it's pretty cool having that and feeling a little bit more secure. Oh, and yes, thank you, Kevin. Kevin's pulled up for folks who are listening. There is Ask the Tech Guy episode 21, how to use hardware security keys like the YubiKey for two-factor authentication. So he walks you through what you need to do to what it is and what you need to do to sort of get it set up in some places. Nice. So that is the Yubico YubiKey 5 NFC. That one will run you $45. The other ones are priced up or down from there, based on which model you get and which generation of YubiKey you get. The first one was blue. I think that's just called the YubiKey security key or something like that. And it's got a little gold circle. You tap on it and then that lets it know, hey, I want to make this connection. And then, it's kind of fun to get all of this stuff set up and know that I'm adding a level of you got to actually be there to log in, which is...
it's like a digital key for your computers, which is nice.
Yeah.
I feel like also just for anybody curious, if you do have an iPad that doesn't have NFC, so that will not work with it. But I was just thinking I would like NFC in my iPad now.
Yeah, me too.
Even though it'd be a little, maybe they'd have to have multiple contacts or something so you don't have to like tap one corner of your iPad, but
I would set it down on
my desk and all the lights turn on.
I wonder if that's why.
Yeah, probably. Cool.
So tell me, what is your pick of the week?
I have a twofer for all of the Siri Shortcuts fans out there. And these are two kind of like pro level apps to go alongside Shortcuts. So one is called Launch Cuts, and then the other is called Toolbox Pro. And Launch Cuts is a way to organize your shortcuts and basically jump into them quickly or more quickly. There we go. Compared to just scrolling through the Shortcuts app. This app is built for me. Not yes. literally, but I have painstakingly ordered like 900 Siri Shortcuts in the app by color and by icon in the Shortcuts app with zero organization tools. It's just a single list. I don't even have multiple select. So I've done this one by one by one. And it literally took me like 25 hours. I'm not even joking. Like, but I had to because
what?
I worked on it and I was dying because I had no organization system and I had so many hundreds of shortcuts that like I would look at the app and my brain would just be like, no, like you can't, I can't do this right now. And so Launch Cuts, I mean, I already had organized them all into groups, so setting Launch Cuts up was super easy for me. But what it does now is basically lets me jump in and open those shortcuts like just by those folders. I don't have to scroll to the right position in Shortcuts. And then I even tweeted out Launch Cuts has support for multiple windows, which on iPad you can basically have like multiple versions of the same app open with different things at the same time. And so I had... in the slide over multitasking view of iPad OS, you can have like multiple apps in slide over. And I had one like this array of all of the colors of all of my different folders that I can just cycle through and jump into my shortcuts. And so that app already for me is helping me curate my stuff so that I can share it more, because that's one of the hardest things. Like, so I think I was saying, I've just been fighting against shortcuts this entire time because sync stuff wasn't working for a long time. And then just like getting to my shortcuts and knowing what I have can just be like a mental overload. And so this app is, I'm loving this so far. It's going to help me make more videos, which is awesome. And then Toolbox Pro is basically, instead of organizing it from the top, it's adding more actions from the bottom. So this guy has built in like over 50, I don't even remember how many now. There's so many individual actions that just do one little thing that Shortcuts should be able to do, but kind of can't yet. It's sort of like because Shortcuts is an extensible system, anybody can build an app with a shortcut that just does something for you. And so he has things like turn the list in the opposite order just so that I can get things in reverse, or like check whether there's something currently playing on any of these, or like more advanced stuff. So I definitely recommend both. They are both paid apps, but if you are into Shortcuts, this stuff is super awesome. I want to see more like this, so I recommend everybody who has iOS download these apps and give these guys your money. And also, hopefully, Apple hire some of these people because I would love to see Shortcuts get some more organization. But yeah, this is an awesome series of apps. If you're into this world at all, I definitely recommend both of these.
Sweet. Sweet, sweet, sweet. Yeah, I love Toolbox Pro, even as a light Shortcuts user. Although maybe I'm actually an advanced Shortcut user, but you're just on a different plane. And so in comparing myself to you, you're like the equivalent of Cthulhu, and I'm just, I don't know, King of the Fairies, like Oberon versus Cthulhu. I'm nothing in comparison to your...
Wait, those are very specific.
There, perfect. Ah, goodness. If you're not watching video version of Smart Tech Today, you miss out on so much. I just got to say it.
Showing me 10 times larger than Micah.
Yes. And so trying to compare myself to you in that way is... Yeah, that was specific, but those were two things that I could sort of think of quickly. I played Oberon in middle school in our production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. So that's why I could think of Oberon quickly. And then Cthulhu is always my choice for an Eldritch God. So, you know, you learned a little bit about me today. And I learned a lot of bit about you.
Well, you're definitely like not bad at Shortcuts. I think it's also like the app is fairly confusing. And so something like this that it continues to like abstract away stuff that I could do some of this stuff in Shortcuts, but it would take 10 steps in scripting and knowing what I'm doing and all this. And apps like this that take even what could be a common feature that you might already do and just make it that much easier for the everyday person is like, I'm all for that. I think apps that provide functionality to Siri Shortcuts like this specific just for Shortcuts should be a thing, because Shortcuts is on every single iPhone right now, or every single iOS 13 device at least. So it's one of the default apps, and there's like huge markets for this. So I hope these guys get lots of success. I will say some of the stuff in Launch Cuts probably would I'd have to assume will come to Shortcuts. I really hope to God that there's not forever just one column that I can't select from. Like, that needs to be improved. But even then, I think these guys are doing innovative stuff, and they're like small indie developers, so I'm like, can you add this? And he's like, yeah, sure, here's a new action for it, which is awesome.
Cool. All right, well, I think that is gonna do it for us this week. Of course, if you have questions that you want answered, you should email us. You can send that to stt@twit.tv. We record the show live every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, which is 2300 UTC. The reason we do that is because it's round about the time that, you know, people are either getting done with work or are about to eat dinner or have already eaten dinner. While we sit here with hungry, growling bellies doing the show, you get to happily watch the show and join us live. You can head to twit.tv/live. That's where you see the show live, no matter what the show happens to be. Of course, you can subscribe to our podcast. If you are listening to it for the first time and you know you want more of this beautiful stuff, you head to twit.tv/stt. That will give you a place where you can subscribe to our show in both audio and, yes, video. Either or is available there, and links to all those things. Matthew Casanelli, if folks want to follow you online and see all the good stuff you're creating, the 25 hours, 26 hours of work you did, where do they head?
YouTube.com/MatthewCasanelli, where I also now have an automatic playlist for all of the Smart Tech Today episodes. So that is like hosted on my thing there. And I have been hosting everybody on my Twitch channel as well while we're live, which is fun.
Yeah, awesome. You can find me on pretty much every social thing, including the new bit. Is that what it's called? Bite.
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 Yeah.
At Micah Sargent, or you can head to chihuahua.coffee, where I've got links to the different things that I do.
I got to follow you there. I've been playing around with the beta. Ooh,
very exclusive. You were in the beta. Wow. Air horns.
I'm just being a dork in those. I think I was like eating Christmas cookies and then talking about coffee. So
oh, you know.
I was going to do one that was like, I was like, hey, everybody, I'm excited to share you all this information about shortcuts. So when you get started with, and then it just cuts off because it's only 6 seconds. It's
See, like, that's my kind of humor. So you would have got me with that. I would have re-bited you. No.
Yeah.
That is the verb.
Take a bite out of.
That's the Matthew. Verb. It is called re-bite. I don't like it, but that's the verb. they chose it, not me. All righty, folks. Say goodnight to all your smart assistants.
Good night, someone else.
And there were 1,000 groans of Sonai being switched into recycle mode.